welcome to Film Kid Asks, the podcast where I ask questions to working professionals in the film industry from the perspective of someone just getting started. My name is Jordan, and today I'm joined by Megan Follows, a Canadian actor with a long career in both theater and on-screen acting. You can see her in projects like Anne of Green Gables and Rain, to name just a couple of her impressive credits. More recently, she's been directing and has just finished filming her debut feature, Maternal. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Megan.
Thank you so much for asking me. It's so funny. It has been a while since I first met you and your wonderful dad out on the set of Heartland, I guess it was, right?
Yeah, you made quite the impression, because I remember there was that one scene that I was there for where you had ants crawling all over you. And I remember they were biting you, and you stayed in character the entire time. I was so impressed. It made such an impression on me at such a young age. I was like, wow, that is an actress right there.
I had stood on an anthill, that's right. And as the scene progressed, I thought it was hot out. I thought I'm getting sweaty, a little tickly, itchy. What's going on all the way up my pant leg, up the back of my shirt? Yeah. And when we cut, I said, what is going on? Look down. And I was standing right on that ant nest, that hill.
My dad showed me, and you could literally see the ants crawling under your shirt. So, yeah, they couldn't even use the take, even though you had powered through it, because you could see ants all over you.
That is hysterical. And then running out of the field, like ripping that shirt off.
I know. Crazy. But yeah, you made quite the impression on me. So nearly your entire family is involved in the entertainment industry in some capacity, with both your mother and father being actors as well, and your father being a director, as well as your siblings working in the industry. So how do you think that that has influenced you as a performer and a storyteller growing up in that environment?
Well, it obviously influenced me in many ways. Probably hard to think about what way the most, except for it's what I always knew is the first thing that comes to mind, because my parents were primarily theater actors. So when we were kids, we spent a lot of our childhood going to different theater festivals with my parents, whether it was Stratford or going out east, the Neptune Theater, Theater New Brunswick, Barrie, different festivals. And it really was a huge love and a part of their life. So it's a different discipline and a different world than working in film and television. And of course, it's sort of the opposite. You're night owls in the theater. I mean, once you get over rehearsals, but oftentimes you're rehearsing one show during the day and performing at night. So you're sort of alive. Your energy is kind of at the forefront from 8 p.m. on. I just remember we were around a lot of very well-known and respected actors, Dougie Campbell, Bill Hutt. Just as kids, we would see all of the Kate Reid, just different people. And of course, the theater is an actor's medium, although my father also was a director in the theater as well. But it's really focusing on the play, the story, the words, and that exploration. So I was always a big daydreamer to begin with. I liked make-believe and make-believe worlds. So I kind of slipped right into that one. Yeah.
Fair enough. So how do you approach film and television acting versus theater acting differently? Because you've obviously done quite a bit of both. So how do you approach those different types of formats?
Well, the truth is that often in film, certainly in television, we get very little time for that exploration. So you're doing a lot of that thinking beforehand on your own. And that's where homework is kind of critical. Knowing your lines. Knowing sort of the fundamentals so that you're not thrown, because there's so many distractions when you're on a film set, hence the story of the ants. I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg, you know. And oftentimes what it feels like, to be honest, especially in television, and depending on the budgetary constraints of the show you're on, is that it feels like often the least amount of time is given to the actors, because shots have to be set up, they have to be lit, you have to move from one location to another, and that all takes time. Time is money, every minute counts. But I often found it, I don't know that I would say amusing, but interesting, that the least amount of time often is given to the performers. So you really have to be on your game. be really sharp and really, really focused. And of course, the difference when you're building a character in a rehearsal hall in theater, even if you're having to work fast, and sometimes productions come up faster than others, but you get that time for explorations. You get to delve in and you get to stumble. You get to make perhaps wrong choices. And you do that too in film and television, and then depending on how a director is going to guide you and help you. But it's just a different world that way.
Right. So is there anything that you took from doing so much work in the theater that you've brought to your, what you do to prepare for a film role or a television role?
For me, I actually started in television and film. So I started off in front of a camera more. And the beautiful thing about being in front of a camera as often is that it is so mercurial. It's going to happen and you don't get to hold on to it. So it has a different kind of energy. You're focusing on one part of something, one part of a whole, and often completely out of context. So you're putting something under the microscope. So actually, it was more nerve-wracking for me at first to go into the theater and have to share that process with many more people. And then also realize that you didn't have a camera, which is like a conduit for your spirit. I always feel, you know, it's right there, you know, sucking in your soul. Now you have to come out of yourself and you have to share it with an audience, even if it's something deeply personal. So there's different technical muscles that are involved.
That completely makes sense. So as you mentioned, you got into acting at a young age and your first credit was being in a commercial at the age of 9. How do you think becoming a performer at such a young age has affected your approach to the craft? Because I believe your first television show that you booked, you were 11.
Yeah, I think because my parents did it, I didn't have to convince anybody that it was something worth doing. I had parents who loved what they did. And I think I was pretty cocky, pretty cheeky when I was a little kid. And my parents remember us all as a family watching some show and me looking at the television and pointing and saying, I can do that better. I want to do that. But of course, it's an adult world. It's a different kind of world. So I think I always say I was very lucky that I started as a child in Canada. It was lucky in some ways. In other ways, we didn't have the union rules. So I worked a lot. I worked long hours, I would say. I just happened to love what I did. So I was very lucky, and I was lucky that I was in the company of people that actually kind of either respected or feared my parents. So it was a smaller business and people knew my parents. So I think that was also protected me.
That's great. And I'm happy that that was your experience in the industry, especially starting at such a young age. So I couldn't actually find much information on your training and education. What training have you done that you've found useful, if any?
I'm laughing because you did say I worked as a child. So my education, perhaps, was work. I would say that is something that for me definitely suffered. And again, as I said, we didn't have rules where you were doing at the time, you know, X amount of hours of tutoring. I was, you know, jumping on a horse at lunch and running around. And it was a period show that I did when I was 11. But one of my early jobs too was a short film, one of the first films, if not the first film that Atlantis Films ever did. It was a short story by Margaret Lawrence. So I remember when I was 10, hanging out in this old farmhouse in Peterborough, and we're sitting around a kitchen. It's an old wood stove. There's no heat in this big old farmhouse, very small crew. And there's Margaret Lawrence sitting around the table with us talking and laughing. I mean, that was a pretty extraordinary experience. When I look back, I got to cross paths and witness some pretty prominent and amazing people.
That's incredible. So how do you approach characters in television? Because you have done a lot of TV work, and that's kind of more long form and generally sees a slower character progression versus how you approach working in film or theater, where the characters have to progress a lot quicker.
Well, it's funny. You know, I did a couple series when I was a kid, and then, of course, I did the mini series with Anne. But I hadn't done many series, and Rain, it had been a long, long time since I'd done a series, and we ended up doing, I think, 78 episodes of Rain. It was old school, 22 episodes a season. And you never know what's going to happen from one episode to the next in that case, in terms of a character development. There may be big sort of historical hooks to put a character on, like I know down the line X, Y, and Z might happen. So you kind of really immersed yourself in the reality of a scene and in a moment and just having fun with that character and playing with the other performers. I was lucky in the case of Rain because I had a really great character. And the writers ended up having a lot of fun writing for me. So I had a blast on that one.
Yeah, you got to play around a lot. So as an actor with a very long and successful career, you've worked with many different casts and crews. What makes for a great working relationship with a director, specifically in film and television?
Directors in television in particular have a huge responsibility and a weight on them that before I started directing in television, I would not have fully understood. I would hope I would have appreciated, but I wouldn't have understood the degree of the pressure on them, because it comes back to time is money. So there's a tremendous amount of focus and pressure on the clock. And so I think, you know, a good director has an incredible balance of knowing what they want and how to get it, because they have to get a lot above and beyond what is our particular moment. But having said that, really, actors need to be in a bit of a bubble to a degree, because it actually is the safety mechanism. Because at the end of the day, when someone is watching a television show, they have no idea that there was a rainstorm that came up. There was all of a sudden thunder. And your dad would know this too from working in Alberta, where the weather, it's like the weather can change on
changes
a dime.
Changes on a dime, yeah.
On a dime. And Heartland. And I think it was your dad who said to me, you know, Heartland is a much more difficult show to direct than people might
give it credit for.
Yeah, because it's a family show. There's animals, children,
weather.
There's unbelievable weather.
Yeah.
And animals. And I took that to heart, literally. And it's true. At the end of the day, as I said, that it all funnels down into that. And they need to carry that story in those words. And that's what an audience is going to be focusing on. Do they like these characters? Do they believe them? Even if they don't like them for the right reasons, you know, that's really the challenge, I think, of directing.
Right. So as an actor who has transitioned into directing, what have you taken with you from the directors that you've worked with and your own experiences that you've brought to your work as a director working with different actors?
It's funny, the first thought that I came actually in my mind was really more the actor in me, which is do your homework. Don't waste people's time, because as I said, time is too precious. So if you have ideas and you have something to share, that a good director will have brought something to the table, but will also be open to what your interpretation of something is, especially if it's a long form program. Because when you direct on episodic television, you come in as a guest. We do a lot of block shooting in Canada, so we shoot two episodes at the same time. On American shows, in Rain, for instance, we didn't block shoot. We shot off one entire episode, then the next episode. So you have a lot of new and different directors coming in. Mm-hmm. So you have to, as a director, respect that the actors, the technicians, the camera crew, there are people that have more continuity with a show than you do. Having said that, what's really kind of wonderful is you also bring in a fresh energy and a new perspective. Sometimes crews and actors are open to that, and sometimes they're not. But in both cases, whether you're an actor or a director, you better have done your homework so that you have something to offer. And if someone else has something better to offer, be open to that. But it gets treacherous when in either case there's a stalemate, but it's not because something's being offered of interest. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So obviously you've worked with a lot of different crews, but you've also worked with a lot of different casts. What makes for a great collaboration with other actors as a performer?
Needing your dance partner. I would say if anything, particularly on the stage, you really need your dance partners for many, many reasons, obviously. And you kind of lock into people. And I think that's the same with good acting anywhere, is listening. It's kind of the fundamental thing, you know. Are you listening? What is coming at you? And it can be difficult, you know, not every experience is a nice experience. So sometimes you have to be protective and you have to know how to stay focused and concentrate. But on a show like Rain, we were so lucky. It was such an international group of actors. They were, a lot of them were for England, Australia, Canada, America, New Zealand. And they were just a lot of fun. Most of them were away from home, so they kind of needed each other as a group. And we were grateful. I was certainly grateful to come to work and play. I mean, you got to dress up and play in a castle. Oh my God, and you get paid for it. So that was pretty fantastic. And really an excellent crew, hardworking crew, because the crew is putting in the hours. Some of them are putting in incredibly long hours. And when you're the camera crew, they never get a break, you realize, because, you know, even when we're doing turnarounds as actors, or we're having to get out of this costume or do that, or you realize that some of those camera crew, I mean, if they're not actually there when the camera's rolling, they're then doing the setup for the next. So there's people that are working really hard. So it never helps a workplace to be an asshole, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Going off of that a little bit, how, as a director, do you work to cultivate a good set environment?
Preparation is, again, really important. So often when you're directing on episodic television, you have a prep period. And that's really, really important, because on the day you lose your time. And there'll be so many unknown factors. I mean, I keep saying this about time, but there's so many factors that come in and just the things that can slow you down. So having the discussions beforehand and being very clear about what the intention is, so that sometimes if you have to deviate from things, you have good communication. Communication really is the bottom line. And, you know, directors are people too. We have personalities. So sometimes directors are, you know, are nice and quiet, and sometimes directors are barking or loud, but that's okay too if there's passion. I think if there's passion and focus and interest, there's room for personalities. I always say at the end of the day, the only thing that matters is what ends up on the screen. I mean, really, I've worked on shows where people have been on a long time, or the crew, whatever. And, you know, they want to get the hell out of there. They want to end the day and get home and see their kids. And I always understand that, but I guess because my family too, that was our life. And my parents' life was that work and was the theater. To me, it was more important what we ended up doing and what ended up on the screen. I think the worst thing you could be accused of in my family is being boring or mediocre. That one hurts.
Right. You know? So I think sometimes, obviously, there is a degree of separation between the cast and the crew, and there is that sort of protective bubble to make sure that the actors are in the right space. So what is important for other crew members to understand about the acting process, especially as kind of younger filmmakers that we might not yet know from being on set a lot?
Well, you know, it's really interesting because there's been a big change in the last number of years, and the phone is one of the big changes. I mean, there was a time when you went on a set, and there are probably still sets like this, and I actually have a lot of respect for sets like this that ban phones, and that if you're on set, your attention is what's happening on that set. Even if you're not in that space, you're just outside that space, that it's kind of a sacred space. It comes back to, what are we doing? Why are we doing this? If it's going to take up 12 hours of my life, let's do it 120,000%. Let's put the focus there, because it's very easy to get distracted now with our outside lives and get separated from one another. When I started out, especially in Canada, the DP was also often the operator. So they were right there on the floor with you. The director was standing beside the camera. There weren't video villages and screens to be looking at. You were in that space. There was a complete communication between your DP and your director. Oftentimes, and your director might sit on the camera at times and look through the lens to get a sense of a feel. And you were all around this sacred thing called the camera. this conduit through which all this storytelling had to come through. I always say the camera is another character. It's a point of view, it's a perspective. It's so focus had to be there. Everybody was really there. And I find, you know, people are off in their corners now more. You know, there's this video village and then there's the DP's over there and then the director's over there. And now it's going to be interesting in this new environment. I, as a director, like being on the floor. I like being by the camera. I like to look at a shot, you know, and see, but then I want to stand by the camera and either look at the, you know, there's so many monitors on cameras now, too, to see that. But I like being close to the performers, too, so that I can come in and we can do this dance together, because it is a dance. And at times it's really a technical dance.
For sure. Yeah. This industry has progressed at such a rapid rate with technology. And so I think as someone who started their career at such a young age and has been kind of there for the development of the Canadian film industry, and obviously has been working both pre-digital in the film world and then through the digital era, I think it's very interesting seeing or hearing about, at least because I obviously haven't seen it, but hearing about how things have progressed and how set environments have changed and what we should be holding on to. But switching gears a bit, more focusing on directing. You've just directed your first feature, which congratulations, by the
Thank
way.
You.
What were some of the things that you learned through that process? Because obviously you'd done some episodic television beforehand and you dipped your toe into the world of directing. And obviously you've been on sets forever, but doing your first feature and having that as your project, what were some of the things that you learned?
Well, again, it was a low budget feature, so you're fighting time a lot. What I learned is that I love the creative components and having more of a say in certain choices, working with the set designers and the costume designers directly as you're creating this world and working close with the writer on the piece. We had a lot of fun with Amy Beth McNulty, who was our lead. And everybody was incredibly good, spirited and troopers. I've also directed in theater, and I think you're really the conductor in a way too, in terms of being responsible for the whole picture. When you come on in television, particularly more in American television, and I think Canadian television is doing this too now, is really there's a showrunner who's the creative. You're coming on to serve someone's vision, especially if a show is really well established. If you're coming on earlier on, you're a part of that initial discovery of it. And then when you come on later, you're honoring someone else's vision. What's fun is being able to bring your own influence into that. And that's a balancing act. And some creatives are more responsive to that than others. On Rain, I had a pretty amazing perspective because I'd been on the inside as a character. So I knew the sets and the world, and I was very possessive of my character and her world. And I'm someone who really loves to block. I think it's important. Far too often I see watching television standard blocking, you know, walk and talk, master, master. You know, a lot of that is a symptom of time. Again, time, time, time. And also knowing that a network or a broadcaster, they're going to want the master. They're going to want this. You can make the most great master shot you can get and really interesting two shots, but they're going to want the close-up. So you have to kind of cover yourself off. When you're doing a film and it's its own piece, you get to make those decisions more. I think this entire scene could be played in this. I only want this one moment. I don't need all of this. I want them to stop talking right now. I want a reason for that, you know. Having that control and that playfulness was really exciting. And sometimes low budgets actually mean you really have to get inventive. I had a wonderful DP, Russ Guzzi, and we had met doing a couple episodes of a series for Hallmark. And Russ came on. He also has a background in documentaries, and he was not only the DP, but he was operating. So we had a lot of fun because it felt a bit like going back to what we knew, where we got to play. And I love the stairwell. I like the look of this. Can we do it? Yeah, fuck it. Let's do it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. I feel like that's probably a great way to transition, is doing so in an environment where you're obviously already very familiar, because it takes some of the, you still obviously need to do the homework on the episodes that you're working on, but it does you know, alleviate a little bit of the pressure, I'm sure, having a deep knowledge of the characters and the world and the crew and all of that. So I imagine that's a really great way to kind of start your transition from working as an actor into the world of directing. So what excites you about directing? Why did you start to direct and switch into this world?
I always loved photography. So I always did photography. I tend to think visually. And I wanted more control in the telling of the story, because we really have very little control as actors in television. You're at the mercy of other people's choices. And I just felt that I was ready for that. The first thing I directed actually was in the theater. And I had been given an opportunity through Knightwood Theater. I had done a production for them 2 years in a row of a play called The Penelopeiad by Margaret Atwood. And the artistic director at the time, Kelly Thornton, wanted to encourage and support me to spread my wings. So that was an amazing experience too, because when you're directing theater, you are responsible at all times for the whole picture. There's no fixes later on in the edit suite.
Right.
And you have to really have an awareness spatially of your sets and your light and your sound and your performance and all of those coming together and serving each other. And it's a very collaborative process too, with the set designer and the costume designer. And you stand back. What I noticed the difference with acting is that an actor's depth of field is very deep, but their peripheral vision is extremely narrow. And a director's peripheral vision has to be much wider. And it's not that it's less deep per se, but you got to see the whole picture, right? The director's going, okay, that's great. That's your job. That's great. But if I'm not getting it over here, or we're not seeing it, or people in the back row don't feel what you're doing, or that's not translating. You can feel all you like on stage, but if you don't come out and meet an audience, you don't have that camera coming in and doing that, right?
I'm sure that's also transferable to film, because obviously there is this whole other technical side of things on a film set that the director has to be, you know, has to be seeing, that obviously the actors don't necessarily have that same depth of understanding of why the choices are being made and all of that.
Yeah, something may convey a feeling in a wide shot spatially, depending on where your lighting and your sets and your positioning, and, you know, that could tell me something about loneliness, maybe more than being here. And maybe both would serve, but maybe that might tell me something. And some of that is theatrical. Some of that is what the gift of actually directing on this stage gave me. Hence why I think blocking is really important. Blocking based on text. Why are we moving when we're moving? Why are we just standing here and talking? Not arbitrarily, because we don't do that in life. We very rarely do things arbitrarily. You know, and if we do, then there's usually a comment on that. So I fight for my blocking.
That's great to know. So I'm going to ask you one last question before I open it up to my peers. And that is, what are some vital things? Because obviously a lot of us that are listening in to this podcast are young and want to be filmmakers. So what are some vital things that student filmmakers should know about directing actors?
I think every director should try acting at some point. Even if it's terrifying and you do it badly, it doesn't matter. Know what it's like. I think it's important to be inside the shoes, to be inside that skin for a bit of an actor, just to understand. Because sometimes it might even help you understand, why the hell are they so nervous? Why are they not getting this? This is not difficult. What's happening here?
Right.
Right. It's knowledge. The more knowledge you have, the better off you are. You know, I'm an actor, so I can say that. We're childlike in the best way, which means in the best sense, you either want the wonder, you want the spontaneity, but you need to know how to keep it open and not shut it down. And so again, it's about communication. So I would say that helps, because then you can get a sense of it. Then see things. Watch good acting. In terms of what a director should know about acting, watch good acting so you know the difference, because there is a difference.
Yes. Thank you so much. That's all I have, but I'm going to open it up to a few of my friends who are going to be able to ask you questions as well.
So you were talking about how you mainly, or not mainly, but you definitely have a background in theater. And what I was wondering, do you ever feel like it's challenging to stay engaged in the source material? And if so, how do you find ways to still challenge yourself of the script?
Yes, definitely. I mean, one of the things that's nice is now, some of the best writing right now in terms of film and television is in television. Some of the longer form programming, it's very exciting in terms of character development and what we're seeing. It's always tricky, though. The biggest challenge is the expectation of going from 0 to 60 in the script. You know, what a good play and great pieces of literature have done is allowed for a build and moments so that there's a progression of thought. And oftentimes you're expected to go here, then go there. But that is your job as an actor, right? Is to figure out. And that again means, oh, right, okay. Normally there'd be, you know, another page of exchange between this and this, but I can't do that. It's the style of the show. Your job is to make it work as an actor. That's the bottom line. So come up with solutions, come up with creative solutions, and find a way to make it work. But it can be a struggle for sure. A lot is said without words. So it's looking at material and finding another way at it, not taking it on face value, being a bit more interesting with it. You know, you're saying this, but what do you really mean? Maybe you mean something else, or, you know. And again, that comes back to homework. Do your homework because you will not often on set have the luxury of that exploration.
So I love how passionate you are about blocking, and I was wondering if you could describe one way you've creatively blocked a scene that really conveyed the emotion that you wanted to portray.
One thing that comes to mind as an actor, I remember I had a scene and there was a lot of jewelry set out. And my character was royal. And one of the servants was elevated to a position, a high position for the day. So I had to let them wear some of my jewelry. And I had to pick up pieces of the jewelry and put them on. And I had a speech. And I really knew my lines, because as I said, that was like critical, right? So that nerves or fighting for something isn't going to, you're not going to screw yourself by not remembering what you have to say, right? So, homework, homework, homework. You do your homework enough so that you can throw it away. I'm not someone who believes that you stick to it and that's the only way. But know the words enough so that you have the freedom and the fluidity to get rid of them or so that you're not struggling with thought. But I remember that, God bless the director, I think had probably heard that I liked blocking and was concerned that everything was going to come to a grinding halt. But I had worked out my stuff, but I knew that, I'm not going to just stand here and deliver this. This is this person's finest jewels, and I'm going to be putting some of these on this servant. So everything that I'm going to say, I'm going to specifically time with the pieces of jewelry that I pick up. And I'm going to place them on this person. It's not arbitrary again. It's a punctuation of what I'm feeling. It's also funnier. There's also just a purely technical thing involved in that. So when I saw it, I thought it worked. I thought it was funny. And I had a plan for that, right? Again, it wasn't just like, I think I want to, maybe, I wasn't stalling for time. I knew my lines, I knew what I needed to do, and I didn't want to throw it away. I didn't want to lose an interesting moment. So, from an acting point, I remember that one.
It is really admirable how like precise you are with your blocking, and it's cool to hear someone talk about that because I don't think anyone has really ever gotten that specific onto it. What other like elements stand out to you in regards to direction that you think are just as crucial as having a good like blocking setup? Are there any more that kind of stand out to you?
I think as a director, I mean, sometimes you have to have a game plan and you have to know what you want, and then you have to be open to an actor coming in and saying, you know what, I wouldn't do this, or no. And so I'm grateful to all the directors that had a game plan and were open to me saying, I would like to try this and that, as opposed to just doing this. So I think, again, if you have a reason and you've backed it up with a purpose, then people will get on board. So for me, I learn as a director to trust my actors too, because there's the actor in me that thinks, oh, I might do it this way, right? But you have to be open to it. And honestly, because time is money, the place that always I found got short shrifted was the blocking. People are going to spend a lot of time often lighting, and they recognize that that is essential. It's critical, but so is blocking, because it's the action. It's putting the purpose of the words and the meaning and movement or not movement, but there's got to be a reason for it, right? So good actors are so great because they do that work for you too. They've put thought to that, and that's such a delight, you know.
That's really helpful, especially the focus on, it's not always about lighting the actor, it's about making sure that there's purpose to what the actor is doing in the first place. That's really helpful.
I mean, and really, there's two things, because the truth is it's also a visual medium. It's not a radio show and it's not a play. In the best sense, everything comes together, right? And the lighting is exactly telling that story and conveying that feeling, and that has to be honored. And the camera, the movement, it's a dance. We're all doing a dance. We each need to be honoring everybody else's input. And then it all comes down really to a moment where then the actors have to take it and they've got to elevate it and bring it to life. If we don't care about characters, if they don't move us or intrigue us, engage us, I don't care how fucking great the setup is. If you lose me there, then you've lost me. So, I mean, that's why sometimes, you know, you go back and you look at those incredible cinema verite and early film, you know, you look at those things. And that all comes back down to the first question that was asked to me, really, is your story and your words. What story are you telling? How are you serving the story? What's serving the story? The lighting is serving the story. The acting is serving the story. The movement is serving the story, right? We're storytellers. And we have different, the wardrobe is serving the story. The set pieces are the props. I love that. I love props. I love props. I love sets. On Rain, I got to explore them as a character. I love sets. I love going in and looking at a set. And that's all telling the story. That's the fun part. We get to have fun.
I mean, that was a great set and some pretty phenomenal costumes that you got to explore in.
Mm-hmm.
So me and my sister both have a lot of experience acting in like very, very small student films. And in those settings, there is not a lot of leeway for an actor to really explore the role and share ideas. And so I was wondering if you had any tips on maybe how to get your ideas across and I guess enhance your position on set for an overall like better experience.
You know, sometimes it's a matter of time. Sometimes it's a matter of speaking to someone earlier. I was going to say, because if you're already on that set and someone's doing it and they've already locked into it's going to be this way, and maybe some of it is really about people having confidence, even in themselves, I'm sure even for directors, and knowing that I can veer from my thinking about something because I have enough confidence in this to have room for something else. So if you're saying you've had a few experiences where it's been very rigid, I mean, maybe the thing is to try to talk to someone before that camera is rolling. And there are tricks that directors do on episodic television. I mean, you have to use every minute that you have while they're setting up in this scene. I've seen, you know, directors pull actors aside to start thinking about a different scene, because that's the only time they're going to get. There's a half hour lighting setup instead of sitting around and waiting, taking those actors into that other set and going, okay, I know we're going to think ahead, but let's do this. So the same could be said for an actor. And you know, sometimes you're met with resistance and someone who just doesn't want to. And I guess that's where it gets kind of scary as an actor, but you get to put yourself out there and you get to try something different anyway. If it doesn't really work and they're not happy, they're going to do it again anyway, right? It's kind of scary, but it's like, I'm going to try it, right? Sometimes amazing things happen in that spontaneity, right? And if people can't recognize that, then you learn that too and go, well, maybe I won't do the next film with that person.
Thank you. That was great.
All right. So I'm going to cut it off there. Before we end this, I did ask you to prepare 5 film recommendations, and I would love to hear what you chose and why you chose them.
Okay. That was a really hard question for me because I feel like that's a shifting, changing list for me. So at first it was hard for me to go, oh yeah, bing, 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 and why? And sometimes it's things I've seen more recently and how they've affected me. And sometimes it was going way back in the past. But I haven't revisited some of those films and I wonder how they would sit with me today. I did come up with five sort of for different reasons, but I will say one thing that I was really grateful for. And of course, now you don't have to go to Ontario Place or the Science Center or different things to see retrospectives because you can just get them on Netflix or online. Is watching a body of a filmmaker's work is really interesting. So I remember when I was younger, I went and saw like a whole retrospective on Fassbender, Rainer Werner Fassbender, who did films like The Marriage of Maria Braun and Carell and a miniseries called Berman Alexanderplatz, and one that I loved called Ali Fierich, the Soul, German filmmaker. So that was like, wow. And then watching Godard's films and Vivre sa vie was one that made a big impression on me. Those aren't the five I was going to talk about, but I was going to say to people, I think it's great to look at more than one film on somebody and watch their progression too, because we also tend to think now that, you know, everything's the masterpiece. I think that you watch the development of people in their work as filmmakers, and that's important too. Not everything is a hit. Sometimes there's hits and misses within films, and that's okay. They're growing. It was playing on the television recently, and so I saw it, and I was curious to see it because I had not seen it since I was a teenager at a rep house, was Kazan's East of Eden, the old film with James Dean. And I was blown away with the blocking and staging on that film.
I was going to say that blew me away when I saw it. There were certain things, especially the way that the camera was involved in the blocking of it.
Oh, boy. Incredible. It's very, very theatrical. It's really interesting. It's the camera work is theatrical, poetic. Joan, the woman who plays his mother, oh my God, that performance of his mother is just breathtaking. And there's a scene in the hallway, I remember, the shooting, like when he goes to the bad part of town and he's trying to get to his mother and this, he's dragged away down the hallway and it's very theatrical, but everything is serving a feeling. Or this beautiful shot out in the field where the train is going by. The train is going away, but what makes the shot is way in the distance. It's the placement. It's the spatial relationship of things. I would recommend taking a look at that one again and immersing yourself in a very theatrical experience, but it's very striking. And then I was trying to think of what recently I had seen. I mean, I've seen a lot of films, but something that had really rattled me, I went and I watched it on my own at the movie theater. When I walked home, I was very upset. Was The Joker. And I would say for different reasons, I would say from a performance point of view, I think that Joaquin Phoenix's performance in The Joker, I think he's pretty spectacular where he goes to in that film. I feel like he's someone with a very thin membrane of energy when you watch him. So I just remembered being really struck by that, being very upset and sad when I left that experience. Kurosawa's High and Low. It's an old black and white film, one of his early films. It's a detective mystery, High and Low, beautifully shot. Again, though, his framing. Parasite reminded me a little bit of Kurosawa, just again, spatially, his use of masters, how many people are in a scene, where they're placed, and how long it takes you to finally get in, when you get in. I'm not going to say this director's name correctly. It's a Hungarian film I saw recently. I went to a rep cinema and watched. Was 1945. It was shot in 2017. It takes place at the end of World War II in Hungary. And it's a beautiful film shot in black and white. It's a small Hungarian village and they're getting ready for a wedding and it's sort of all of the personalities. And the station master all of a sudden calls up in a panic because this train pulls into the station and two Orthodox Jewish men get off the train with something they want to deliver. And as they walk into town, the whole town from their history and how they colluded, and everything spirals into this thing. And it was very beautifully shot in black and white. Just thinking about a film that I remembered sticking with me was Raise the Red Lantern, the Chinese film, about the four wives of this wealthy Chinese man in like the 20s. And it's really the relationship of the women. Wife number one, wife number two, wife number three, wife number four, as they have to navigate each other. There you go.
This bit is always difficult for everyone who comes on because obviously there are so many films and so many great films, yeah. But I really appreciate you kind of distilling it down to five that you found interesting recently or that have really affected you. And thank you so, so much for coming on and sharing your knowledge and your time with us. I had an amazing time asking you questions, and thank you to all of those of you who did ask questions. That's all for this episode of Film Kid Asks. Be sure to subscribe and feel free to follow us on Twitter and Instagram or join our Facebook group. New episodes come out every Saturday, and be sure to keep an eye out for Maternal, Megan Follows' directorial debut.